My name's Jen Yuchin.
And I'm Ari Fox.
And we're New Gaming News, a bi-weekly podcast and newsletter focused on the esports and gambling industry.
That's awesome.
So we had a bunch of talks tonight about, you know, the Overwatch League and Blizzard, what's going on with all of that.
Yeah, we can start it.
And, you know, the first article I think was, you know, evident, and we've mentioned this before.
Yeah, so almost, I feel like we talk about this a lot, and it's crazy to, like, actually see it written out and, like, somebody else kind of saying what we've been talking about the last few weeks.
Well, isn't that freaky?
Yeah. Well, honestly, it means that you're onto something. I know I'm always there for its defense, but I was reading this article, and honestly, it kind of sold me on everything that you've been saying as well. The article is called Overwatch League is Dying, Here's What Esports Can Learn From It. And they pretty much go over how many of the pro players are leaving, casters are leaving, and then specifically their league slots selling for $60 million and how that was just way too much.
Right. And they're really you got casters like Monte Cristo leaving, you know, Chris Puckett, who's one of the hosts. I mean, these guys are like, they're jumping ship. You know, it's crazy because you and I talked about in prior podcasts about how the top executives were jumping ship from Blizzard. Like, they were just leaving because they were like, they didn't like the way it was run, and they were just leaving. This was like, I think it was like 3 months ago or something like that. And now you have the actual talent leaving. That's as bad as like when Ninja left from like Twitch to go
Twitch
to like,
Mixer.
You know.
But that didn't hurt Twitch.
No, because...
So, do you think that maybe the talent leaving Overwatch League won't hurt it? Maybe it's just transitioning?
It could be transitional, but, you know, I mean, the proof's in the pudding, and it's like, let's see what happens for 2020 Overwatch. And now, it's almost like I'm looking and seeing, you know, so much talk from Blizzard about, you know, the Call of Duty League that's coming out. And it's almost like they're going to say, okay, we're going to replace the Overwatch League, because we know that one didn't do so great, with Call of Duty, and no one pay attention to that you know, that ugly child in the corner that we just couldn't get off the ground. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, we're all obviously much more savvy than that. And I would give the esports communities and, you know, the fans of esports way more credit than just looking at it from, you know, like a sort of a bait and switch.
What do you mean?
Well, it's like, you know, they beat them with the Overwatch League. Overwatch came in. It didn't do as great as they wanted it to do. And now they're pulling another fast one and say, all right, everyone, forget about that one. Just play Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Everybody, like,
well, I think they're trying to hit both markets, because in the second article, they talk about how Call of Duty has such a long, like, history in gaming, whereas Overwatch, like, a lot of people don't really pay as much attention to it because it is kind of still new and different. So maybe they're just trying to pick something that has, like, a little bit more history and seeing how that works as an actual league.
That's definitely, you know, that could definitely be what it is. But let's recall what happened to the Call of Duty League when it was bought by Activision. You know, in Blizzard. I mean, it was started, as you know, let's go through the history. It was started as by Sundance, you know, a long time ago. And when they were bought out, they weren't doing well. You know, it started in New York, actually, the League of Call of Duty, and Sundance Giovanni was one of the founders of it. And they were, you know, going along, but they at some point, there was an article that came out, I think it was in 2014, that or maybe it was 2015, that they ran out of money. They just plain ran out of money, and Giovanni was sort of like, you know, Sundance was just like, okay, well, then Activision Blizzard came in, bought the rights, or they bought the rights to Activision, then subsequently became, they sucked in the league, Call of Duty League, that Sundance had started. So, I mean, it wasn't always the best, you know, buyout or buy into from the get-go, because Call of Duty, it's got its community, it's very solid. Has it grown any since, you know, its inception?
Mm.
You know, has it? I don't know. What do you think?
I don't think so. I think everybody who plays Call of Duty has always played Call of Duty, and it's almost like a like an NBA 2K or something. They're always going to get the new one. And then, like, there is some fluctuation outside of that, but I think the core audience has been about the same. I don't think it's grown.
Right. So, I mean, look, I...
If anything, it gets more criticism by the fans, but they still play it.
So, but I give... look, I give Activision Blizzard credit for creating the league and organizing it. I mean, let's look at it. At the end of the day, what they're doing is they're saying, okay, we're going to create some legitimacy and some kind of, organization to the whole game of itself.
Mm-hmm.
We create teams, we're going to base them in cities, and those cities are going to like build their fans and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. To this day, I don't feel, other than, you know, maybe the San Francisco Shock or Fnatic or, you know, one of those really major teams or Cloud9, any of these teams that those teams have done pretty good jobs in building their fan base.
Yeah.
But, you know, Excelsior in New York, I don't think they've done a very good job in building that fan base.
I don't agree. I think that they're more concerned about, like, being the team of New York and grabbing that audience. I do think that they've done a good job to grow their brand, though. Or am I just saying that because I'm so hyper aware of them because I live in New Jersey in their territory?
Right, but I mean,
like, it could be different. Somebody across the country, like, is NYXL as branded as I think they are, or do I just know them?
But here's the problem with esports. How do you build your community locally, create your fan base locally, when esports is such an international type of phenomenon?
Well, specifically with Overwatch League and now Call of Duty League, and Box, the company of New York, is partnered with both of them, and they're like a streetwear brand, and also I think they do like local events as well. So that's how specifically these two teams and Box, their partner, are embedding themselves into their local community, because that's pretty much their mission statement. I knew about Ambox already just from the Excelsior team partnership and all of their watch parties that I locally go to. But the article, the third one that I have, is specifically Ambox partnering with the Call of Duty League, the New York Subliners, and they pretty much like run their branding, just like NYXL and things like that. So specifically their community they're super embedded in, but does that mean they're widely popular? I don't know.
Well, here's what
I... But I think NYXL won the first championship for Call of Duty, so they got notoriety from that.
I'm looking at the esports as a whole is only...
You're talking about outside of the leagues and the fans of those leagues.
Right, so my biggest concern is... They recently had the LCS, I think, was in New York, right? Wasn't that in a couple months ago? Was it the League of Legends Championship Series? It was in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center. Which game was that? Was that Overwatch or was that League?
It definitely wasn't Overwatch. Overwatch was in the new Philly Stadium this year.
Right, so there was a tournament in the Barclays Center. Now, I mean, I can't recall all the articles that come out because there's a million of them, but...
I know, they're all over the place. I can't even remember.
One of the teams that came in, and I can't remember if it was the Philadelphia Fusion or some other team, but it wasn't a team from New York, and people were freaking out and going nuts over them. And, you know, the team was in, and it was this whole, like, video of it. And it got news press. It was really great, but it wasn't a New York team.
I think a big difference, though, also with that is, like, if you're a team that is across multiple games, you're going to have a bigger fan base in general as well.
Exactly. Mm. So why are you creating the Subliners? Is it the Subliners?
That's the new New York team, yeah, the Subliners.
So now you're creating a whole new team for another league instead of taking the
Excelsior name.
And the Excelsior name and putting that game underneath the Excelsior org.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that.
Why have two separate...
Maybe because it's franchise specifically, and they can't branch out like that. Maybe if it's... I don't know the rules, but maybe if it's franchise, they have to be their own set of teams.
Yeah, but that is that is that does that make listen? They're all Blizzard Activision games.
Yeah, I'm just saying maybe why? There's rules against it. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's necessarily rules or does Blizzard Activision just want to make a more of a money grab by selling
different merchandise.
Yeah, separate merchandise, separate teams, separate leagues.
Yeah,
and you know now they're making twice as much money as opposed to just. You know, saying, okay, Excelsior, now you're going to have a Call of Duty team underneath your same name. You know what? But, you know, they could have done it a little smarter and said, we can sell you the Call of Duty team and you can put it under the Excelsior name and, you know, but that's going to cost you another 60 mil or whatever.
Mm.
So it's like you give the I think they should have given each team that existed in Overwatch first right of refusal and said if you want you can add another team for X amount of money or we're going to buy or we're going to sell the team another the team for this particular league Call of Duty league to a whole nother organization. And I don't think they did, you know, they did that. So I think bad business move. To try to separate and it's I think it's a little bit greedy of Activision Blizzard to do that because you could have built a bigger fan base by having multiple titles under one org.
So you're saying like each team though in the Overwatch League it would be the same team names and organization for the Call of Duty League?
Sure,
but no. I think the problem with that is if you're not part of the Overwatch League. And you bought into the Call of Duty because it's not like it's matching organizations that went into both. That wouldn't even make sense.
Yeah, but I mean, you could. No, I know it's not matching organizations. I'm saying they could have offered.
Yeah.
Put it on the table for Excelsior and said.
Who's to say they didn't?
I don't know if they did or didn't, but that wasn't in the news.
No, it wasn't.
So we don't know if that was something that they did. If they did, then.
The Call of Duty League just seems super random. It kind of came out of nowhere. And they just changed the format of it. And Overwatch League also did that. In the middle of their season, this past season, they changed to role lock and completely changed the game.
Yeah.
So Blizzard has such a problem with doing that. They can't figure out what they want to do before they launch it. And that's what these two articles go over, pretty much.
Yeah, and I mean, the commissioner of the Call of Duty League is Johanna Ferris. And I think... she's doing the best job that she can. However, you know, her background, I think, is from the NFL.
Yeah, I do believe you're right.
So, what does she know about esports?
Yeah, she just knows regular sports. She's just kind of running her own thing.
So that makes it a little bit more of like sort of a disconnect in some ways. Nothing against her, but
I wonder if they want it to be more like mainstream sports, which I think we talked about last episode. You said that's not even possible because it's a totally different thing.
It's not possible.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, it's a question of, you know, it's really it's you can't compare that. You just can't. It's just two different things. You know, actually, no, I'm sorry. She was part of the NFL, vice president of club business development. And she did that for 11 years. And now she's the commissioner of the Call of Duty Esports. Now, you know, listen, she's got a Harvard degree, so that makes plenty of sense. She's a smart lady. But to tell you the truth, I mean, it's kind of transparent. It kind of doesn't go over well in my mind. What I believe is that that's the whole thing. That's the biggest mistake. It's like, okay, Activision Blizzard hires Johanna Ferris. They want her to be the commissioner. She has a background in the NFL. They want it to be more like regular sports. But I don't think people of esports are playing that. They're like, listen, don't compare us to others to conventional sports. We want to be... There's no comparison.
Yeah.
It's a whole new thing. It's like, all right, let's think of it this way. It's like when everybody, like, you know, it's when people were riding horses and then all of a sudden the car was invented. You know, you can't compare them. They're two different things. It's like a horse is only going to go so fast, but a car, you can go as far and fast as you want. It's just two different kinds of things. Similar in some respects because there's fan bases, but then there's merchandising and all the other stuff, but it but you can't put them in the same box and say, you know, I'm going to design my league the same as I would design, you know, and this woman, Joanna, who comes from the NFL, I'm going to make you the commissioner, and then you take all you've learned in the 11 years that you were at the NFL and apply that to the Call of Duty league.
Yeah.
And how do you ask, how do you even go about doing that? I mean, it's like completely different. You know, it's a very, very different kind of, different fan base, different...
Well, the fact that it's international is a huge part of it, too.
Right, and there has to be a lot of, like... But that's not how Activision Blizzard's looking at it. They're trying to build... I give them credit for that. I mean, they're trying to build esports as, you know, in the United States.
Yeah.
And they only feel that if you're going to build something in the United States, it's got to be... built the same way the NFL's built. It's got to be built the same way as baseball. It's got to be built the same way as the NBA. But it can't be. It's like you're building a completely different design. So you have to think outside the box. And they're not. You know, in
who
my
do,
mind...
Who do you think's doing it well?
I think CSGO does it very well.
Mm.
In Europe, I think... you know, Riot, I mean, Riot with the League of Legends does
I agree.
A phenomenal job. I believe that StarCraft is still huge in Asia, and that does very well there.
Do you think it's because they keep it a little bit more, like, low-key, and I don't want to say, like, I'm trying to think of what I want to say, but it's they've been around forever, so they're doing it the same way as when they started. They're not trying to reinvent it like Overwatch League and Call of Duty is. Like, they're trying to make it sexy, whereas, like, League of Legends, they are just, like, keeping it the way that it has been, and that's why everybody still tunes in.
Right. I mean, listen, you can't... I think these kinds of things, it's like they're sort of pushing... putting the cart before the horse.
Yeah.
They're sort of designing something and saying, I'm building this, and now it's the same thing, and the reason why I don't really believe in esport lounges that much, or esport stadiums that much. I mean, because I just don't feel that, you know, because so much of a video gaming culture is online.
Yeah,
you know, or mobile.
Most people have good setups at their house, unless they're going for, like, a birthday party.
Right, it's so hard to say to someone, you know, come out to the stadium and watch your favorite team play, when they can do that online. You can watch it on Twitch. I mean, why would it be? Listen, I grew up when there wasn't Twitch. There wasn't, you know, video game tournaments. There wasn't esports. And, you know... And what we had was conventional sports. But you know what? I always liked watching it from my living room rather than going to the stadium.
Yeah.
You know, it's just... I mean, there are people who really want, but guess what? When baseball, football, and all the conventional sports first started, many people didn't go out to see them. There were very little audiences that came to the stadiums.
I think
they
that's specifically...
built over time.
I think that specifically brings us into the last article, too, and I'm going to skip to the bottom, but it's, like, predictions for 2020, and it's resolutions for 2020, and it's pretty much saying, like, what esports should do in the next year, and one of the main ones is the esports consumer needs to be better monetized. So, like, I think what they mean by consumer is somebody who is watching from home. Like you said, you've always enjoyed watching from home more than going to an actual stadium. That makes sense to me.
Right, but then there's, like, and there's so many, you know, tournaments you can watch. I mean, mostly, what I really think is going to happen is you're gonna be able to stream on Twitch and Mixer and any of the streaming channels, YouTube Gaming. You're gonna be able to watch high school tournaments.
Yes.
You're gonna be able to watch college tournaments, but the pros, in order to monetize them, pay-per-view.
Do you think it's going to be like that soon? Do you think they're going to start doing that?
Yep.
Because even, like, wrestling does that. Like, All Elite Wrestling, they're getting bigger,
yes.
But they started kind of small. They do special, like, pay-per-view events all the time, and of course people buy them.
It's the only way to support it.
And I think that's fine. I don't think that it's wrong to have to pay $20 to watch a tournament.
No, I mean, it probably won't be that much. It'll probably be, I'm thinking $5-$10.
Even like Evo, let's say Evo did pay-per-view, I would pay for it.
Oh, hell yeah. And it would be well worth it, and you would watch it for 3 freaking days. And think of the you know, that's there's 2 wonderful things about the pay-per-view. 1, a gaming fan, an esports fan, is watching it exclusively. Mm. Okay, so we know that it's
the viewership is more accurate,
and the viewership is accurate. We don't get the nonsense of like somebody coming into the stream and leaving the stream, you know. And 2, they're now, it's a captive audience, so you know that if you're getting sponsors or getting the correct numbers, and everything is, you know, on the up and up, because no one's going to just pay for something and not watch it. They're going to watch it. So,
and it would promote, like, live events, too, at, like, sports bars and stuff. Like, it would promote people to go out, and actually, it would help both. It would help, like, LAN events and parties, and it would help the viewership as well, and it would make more money. So all around, it would be better, because let's say I don't want to spend money for it. Now I'm going to this exclusive watch party at wherever it is so that I can watch it, and it's just, it makes more sense overall.
But not only that, it's also gonna up the popularity of the actual players themselves.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's like, and if they're paying to go watch that player play, that then there's the salaries that now have to be paid to the, you're paying to watch those professional players play. Today, there's a lot of problems with when a player plays and, you know, and they don't win the tournament itself.
They don't make money.
They're not really getting paid that much. They're getting paid like, you know, 20, 30 grand a year, depending on the org. You know,
and okay, then they rely on sponsorships outside of that, things like that.
Right, and that's just it's just a bad model. I mean, I understand the model, but I understand the model because it does a lot to promote the sponsorships, but it's not doing anything to help the orcs. I just don't see how it works that way.
Do you think it would be more beneficial for the sponsors as well? Like, maybe they would be seen more or have more exclusive content when sponsoring an event?
I think as the college scene builds, they'll have plenty of opportunity to sponsor college levels because that'll be free to watch. And then the professional leagues, you know, as it builds, I mean, this is, if Blizzard Activision really want to make something happen, that's what they should have done. They should have struck a deal with Twitch or Mixer and said, we want anyone, if you have a professional tournament, we want something, you have to pay to watch it.
They do have their all-access pass for extra content that they make money off of.
Right. But I mean, if they struck deals with the broadcasting companies, meaning Twitch and Mixer, they could have made a lot more money.
Well, and some tournaments do that. I'm wondering if they didn't do that specifically because they wanted more people to be able to see it since it's so early. Maybe that's why they haven't done that yet. Like, the more viewership possibilities, the better for them, because it's only their second year.
Right. No, I agree. Probably. But that's what you're going to see in 2020. There's going to be a lot of talk about, you know, pay-per-view on the pro-level circuits.
Makes more sense.
It just does. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It's just, it's not a sustainable model the way it is today.
And I think it wouldn't hurt the audience either. I don't think they would have a problem paying for it.
But not only that, if they don't move to pay-per-view soon, they're going to lose a lot of investor money.
Yeah.
I mean, the investors are getting fed up. You can feel it in the articles that you read and in the industry itself. People are sort of getting very upset. And I've read articles about esports being that bubble. And that's something that, you know, you don't want to happen, but it could, because if it keeps being driven, they're going to drive it over a cliff, and that's a dangerous place to be.
Yeah, it's definitely something that we're all just looking at and watching happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but anyway, I think we're going. So I'm going to go to CES. I'll have plenty to talk about when I get back. I'm hoping I can connect with some people out there. We'll get some guests on our show.
That's very exciting.
It'll be great. And maybe some future people who will also be appearing at the CEC. But I really want to get someone talking about AI and how that's going to be more interactive with with esports in general and video gaming. But, you know, it's definitely a world of exciting world out there that I think that, you know, we're going to really be coming across a lot of innovative and creative things in the year 2020.
Yeah,
you know,
it's so early.
You know, like, as Barbara Walter says, this is 2020.
Now you have your chance to use that.
Exactly.
You have to use it as much as possible within the next year.
Exactly. Anyway.
All right, Ari. This was great.
Hope you have a great night. I'm glad you had a happy new year. I had a happy new year, and you know our holidays are all behind us now, so we gotta get to it.
Back to work.
So all the people that are listening out there, you should tell all your friends to listen to our show because it'll be available when, Jen? Tomorrow night?
Tonight.
Or tonight. It'll be up after tonight.
January 6th.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jen. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great 2020, everybody. And we'll hear again from you guys soon.
Bye.